Nice to be here with you guys. Live Hockey Talk Show on this Monday, June 10th at the time of our broadcast. We are going to cover Game 6, all the things that we saw, the things that we liked, the things that we didn't like. We'll preview Game 7. This is what's interesting to me. There have been very few Game 7s over the course of Stanley Cup history. We'll go over all the teams that won those Game 7s on this episode. Plus, we don't break news here on the Hockey Talk Show. We talk news. But we might have some breaking news for you regarding who's going to be waving that flag come Game 7 for the Boston Bruins. Is it the little punch that they need before the game? And of course, we've got your NHL trade rumors and everything else you want to talk about when it comes to hockey right here on this episode of the Hockey Talk Show. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us here on the Hockey Talk Show. Of course, if you have any questions or if there's anything that you want to talk about, do so in the comments below, both on Facebook and YouTube, and we'll try and get to as many comments as we can. I actually have a good amount of space for comments on the show today, so I'm excited to get your guys' interpretation of what's going on in the hockey world in the last 24 hours since the last time we spoke. Don't forget to hit the like button on Facebook and YouTube right now. And if you're listening via podcast, that is certainly appreciated. Hit those 5 stars on Apple Podcast. And don't forget to spread the word on Twitter and Facebook that the Hockey Talk Show is talking hockey with you guys live several times a week here via podcast, via YouTube Live, and Facebook Live. Make sure you guys spread the word. And don't forget, we make all of our money off of our podcast as of right now. So if you can, if you're watching live, go back and listen to the podcast, at least play the first 5 minutes. We'd appreciate that. Okay. Let's talk hockey. We also have another little jib jab between Jim and Pam from The Office. So The Office Stanley Cup 2019 continues for sure. Absolutely continues for sure. Let's break down Game 6 and what we thought. AK, nice to have you in here. Let's see. Blues are good defensively, but they are too slow and just don't score enough to kill Boston off. I still have the Blues winning in Game 7. John's with us on YouTube. Welcome in. If you're on Facebook, hit that like button and let me know that you guys are in the room. And if you want to talk about something or who your favorite team is, so we could touch on something and make sure the show is good for you. All right, Game 6. 5-1 victory. Empty netter from Zdeno Chara. So really a 4-1 game. I actually thought the game was closer than what the score showed, which was kind of cool. I love games like that. It was a close game, and I liked everything that St. Louis did. But as you can see, Boston has been here before, right? The fact that they were facing elimination on the road didn't seem to bother them one bit. And I don't know what Patrice Bergeron said before the game, but everybody's talking about Patrice Bergeron and his pregame speech and how it was unforgettable and all this kinds of jazz. And it struck a chord with the Boston Bruins. You know, they are not going to let anything bother them, and they are in a really good position for Game 7. You want to hear from Marcus Johansson on Patrice Bergeron's pregame speech? I actually don't know if this is going to work. Let's see.
Oh, that was just something special. I think it just... what he talked about, you know, hit everyone in that room. We all knew what he was talking about, and it was just something I think I'll remember for the rest of my life, because, you know, it got us all together and then, you know, put us all in a moment. And for him to step up and do that at that point, you know, it just shows what kind of a leader and teammate he is.
Yeah, it was obviously awesome. Our leadership group is top notch, and whatever they say and do, we all kind of follow. So to see those guys kind of share their knowledge with us, it really helps in the long run.
Coach, that's Carson Kuhlman there in the end. The first one was Marcus Johansson. To hear Marcus Johansson, who is a veteran, who's been around for a really long time, say, yeah, I'm going to remember that pregame speech for the rest of my life. I mean, that's impressive. I don't know what he said, but whatever it was, it worked. The leadership in Boston is incredible. From Patrice Bergeron to Zdeno Chara, who, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he came out and said, yeah, listen, we don't call our rookies rookies. We don't use that word. That's the R word in our room. You know, you're on this team. You're a teammate. The culture there is impressive. You look at their contracts. They all kind of took a little less. All those contracts from Bergeron to Marchand to Zdeno Chara, they're all manageable. They all leave space so that they could re-sign Pasternak, so that DeBrusk is taken care of. You know, all their McAvoy, all their guys, they're going to have room. They're going to have the ability to keep this team together long after Char is gone, because those guys all took really fair deals. There's something really special here in Boston, and I feel like there's a lot of hate for Boston, and rightfully so. I mean, if you hate Boston, I'm cool with that. I'm actually on board with that. As a native New Yorker, I've got no issues with that whatsoever. I applaud that, actually. You know, they've built the right culture. They've done the right things. Bruce Cassidy is the right coach. You know, Cam Neely's the right president. They've done everything that they need to do to put this team together properly. And they didn't look scared at all in game six, not one iota. So good pregame speech from Patrice Bergeron there. Whatever he said, it worked. DeBrusk, yeah, Anthony, with a good point on YouTube. Good comment, and thanks for this. Gold star for you. DeBrusk said, Jacob DeBrusk said, it made him want to run through a wall. I read that earlier. And that's, you know, that's a sign of a good speech. That is a sign of a good speech. You know, passion and drive and motivation, those things are underrated in the world today, you know? So it was good to see that. It was really good to see that sort of thing going on. Okay, everybody likes to criticize the referees, and everybody likes to give the NHL a hard time. That's all you hear about post-game from the mainstream media, from the non-hockey people, from the people that really don't know the game all that much. They want to go on and they want to talk about how bad the refs are and how bad this is, and the NHL's got to fix this, and eye in the sky, and more reviews. Don't like those people. Don't like any of that stuff. Let's take a second here to go against the grain from most media and applaud the NHL for getting the getting the St. Louis Blues goal right. That was a close call, and they took their time. The referees went to the review. They did all the right things, and they called a good goal there. Like, kudos to the National Hockey League for getting it right. And see, that's the tough thing. When you're in the job that I'm in, when you're on the air every single morning, when you're doing a show like this, when you're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you're open to a ton of criticism. The NHL is open to a ton of criticism. The NHL does something. They have nothing but people sitting there waiting to just keyboard cowboys, just waiting to criticize, right? When they get something right, all is quiet. Nobody gets on Twitter and goes, good job, NHL. Excellent review. At NHL, thought you did a great job on that review. Good job, War Room in Toronto. Like, nobody does that. If the National Hockey League blows a call between St. Louis and Boston, you have Rangers fans, Calgary fans, Devils fans, Dallas fans all getting on going, man, the NHL referees suck. When they get a call right, all those people don't care. Just utter silence from the chorus. So let me be the one to say, great job, NHL. It was a tough goal. Like, it was a tough call, but it was a good goal. They got it right. It wasn't easier to see, but video review and everything else, the system was there. They got it right. I thought that Binnington was actually pretty good in the game. I thought that bouncer goal, was it McAvoy that put it on net? It wasn't. I forget who it was who scored. I think it was the second goal in the game. That bouncer was tough. I actually like the bouncer play. I used to actually use that in my old high school hockey days. Just kind of lob the puck in, let it bounce right in front of the goaltender. It would always freak out a goaltender. Freaks out National Hockey League goaltenders. Imagine what high school hockey goaltenders have to face in that sort of scenario. I like that move. And that play, which I think it was the second goal. It was either the second goal or the third goal. I'm looking it up for you guys right now. That play in particular, I really appreciated because, was it Brandon Carlo? I didn't think so. Might have been. Doesn't really matter, to be honest with you. But that goal to me was it was Carlo. Thank you, Anthony. Okay, it was Carlo, Brandon Carlo, with the second goal of the game. That goal to me indicated what the Bruins' game plan was, and I think what it'll be going into Game 7, which is just put everything on net. Look, Jordan Binnington is going to keep you to 2-3 goals on most nights. Your percentage of scoring more will go up the more shots you take. That's an analytics approach. That is an absolute analytics approach. Analytic people will tell you, it doesn't matter if it's from the blue line or from the goal line, if you shoot 20 shots on net, you don't have a really great chance of scoring 5 goals. But if you have 40 shots on net, you do. So as we can see, seeing eye, you know, prayer from the blue line, from just inside the blue line, works for Brandon Carlo, and the Bruins take the lead, and then they never give it up. They never give it up after that. Carson Kuhlman chiming in with a great goal from Krejci, and that was a pretty one too. Nice little ripper over the shoulder for Jordan Binnington, which again just kind of shows you the depth of Boston. They've gotten a lot of great contributions from their bottom six. Achari and Kuhlman and all these guys, you know, Kuhlman in and out of the lineup at times, and Achari's been there pretty solid. Corrali, all their bottom six players, fourth line guys, they're all chiming in, doing great. Ryan O'Reilly continues to be an absolute star for the St. Louis Blues. This guy, you know, this guy should be up for the comeback award, because he's just been fantastic. From hitting the bottom and the lowest part of his career with Buffalo, after signing with Colorado and the offer sheet thing and all that jazz and getting traded and then Buffalo and not doing well, he's come to St. Louis and he has found his game again. As I said in the last episode of the Hockey Talk Show, which you can, by the way, watch and listen to all our episodes at hockeytalkshow.com, I said it that Ryan O'Reilly defines the St. Louis Blues game. Their big forecheck, their hard-hitting, right, battling in front of the net, he kind of personified. He's come in and he's kind of defined the style that this team is going to play. And he's been playing it really, really well. So that's been good to see. And, you know, if the Blues are going to win game 7 on the road, Ryan O'Reilly is going to have a 2-point night, a 3-point night. Like, that's how you're going to be able to tell that game went really, really well. Pastrnak on the power play with just a lightning rod of a shot. Unbelievable. Practiced play all the way. Those guys like to set that up. 5-on-3 power play. And they looked really good. And Boston was able to put it away. And then Zdeno Chara obviously iced the game sealer with the empty net towards the end there. So I thought it was a really good game. It was a fun game. It was close all the way. I think it was 1-0, right? Going into the third period, no goals in the second. So a little bit slow there. But it was a good battle. For the real hockey fans, it was really good. And this is just great for the National Hockey League, because if you go into game 7, you've squeezed the maximum amount of juice that you possibly can in a series. And that's more revenue. That's more everything for the National Hockey League, which is just awesome. Here's a fun fact before we get into a little bit of our breaking news here. There really hasn't been a lot of game 7s in the National Hockey League, which is kind of crazy. Take a look at the graphic up on your stage. If you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, if you're on the podcast, you can go to this point in the show and see what we're talking about here. But here's a list of all the Game 7 winners since 1942. Now, you must be thinking, oh, what is it, Ant? Like 30, 40 people? No. 16 teams. 16 teams since 1942 have gone to a Game 7 and won it. So as much as we love Game 7s and we feel like they're played pretty often, and if you look at this list, there's been a lot since 1987, it really hasn't happened often. The Stanley Cup Finals seem to be wrapped up in Games 4, 5, and 6 more often than not. But the Leafs won it in 42 and 45. Detroit won it in 50, 54, and 55. The Leafs won Game 7 in 64. Montreal won 2 Game 7s in 65 and 71. And there's big spaces in between all of these. Then we didn't see a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Finals for another 16 years when Edmonton won in 1987. The Rangers won in 94, Colorado in 2001, the Devils in 03, back-to-back years there, with Tampa winning in 04 in Game 7, then Game 7 win for Carolina in 06, 09 for the Pens, and the last time it was done was these very Boston Bruins in 2011 when they won Game 6 at home and then won Game 7 on the road against the Vancouver Canucks. So you know, as you can see here, it's just, it doesn't happen as often. That was shocking to me to see this graphic. And thanks for that, courtesy of the NHL on NBC Facebook page. They do a really good job at covering the series. And that's shocking. John on YouTube, the Bruins have the blueprint that every organization should follow. I could not possibly agree with that more. It's funny because for a while we were saying, the Pittsburgh Penguins have the blueprint that every team should follow. And then it was kind of like the Chicago Blackhawks have the blueprint that everybody, because Chicago kind of came in and took the Penguins blueprint and made it their own and changed things up a bit. But now we can really see, even though they haven't had a whole bunch of success, it'll be 8 years since their last Stanley Cup victory. It's still pretty impressive. Two cups in 8 years is still pretty impressive. I know most fans won't agree with that, but it's true. A lot of teams don't win two cups in 8 years. That you can see, yeah, this team has the blueprint. Like I said, everything that they do, everything from their on-ice play to the systems that Bruce Cassidy puts in place to the contracts that the front office has been able to sign, to the way they treat each other in the locker room, this team from start, there's not a detail that has gone unchecked for these guys, not a detail. And they've done everything right. And John, you're right. They are the model franchise for the National Hockey League. We're going to talk trade rumors in a second because we do have a couple, but I do, and I rarely play highlights for you guys, but I thought that this was super worth it. Because to me, not only did this save a goal, but it also saved the game last night. This play from Charlie McAvoy was ridiculous. Shot from the point here from the Blues. Puck comes out on a rebound. Pietrangelo puts in a backhander, thinks he scores. Rask scrambles, puts his glove behind him. I thought he saved it with his glove. Nope. Take a look. McAvoy swats this puck out of midair. Out of midair as it was going in. Boom, right there. Unbelievable play. Swats this goal. Watch this. Here it is. Look at this. Boom. Oh, my God. Holy cow. Look at this. There was a blue, St. Louis blue right there. Braden Schenn is right there. That was pretty damn close. Holy cow. That was damn close. I thought that that was honestly the play of the game last night in game six. That was it for me because that was just an amazing save. McAvoy just, again, continues to just be super impressive. Torrey Krug has returned to his impressive self. And again, if the Blues want to beat the Bruins in game seven, they have got to get in on the forecheck and hit really hard. And they've got to hit those two guys. Because McAvoy and Krug have been leading the charge of this team up the ice. They're able to move the puck up the ice super fast. And if you're not putting bodies on these guys, if you're not getting them into the trainers' rooms with injuries, you know, I'm not saying be dirty, but if you look at what they did to San Jose, they knocked the garbage out of them. They knocked the crap out of them in San Jose. A lot of injuries for San Jose towards the end there. And that was because the Blues were hitting. They were physical. They got to do that. In the games that they won, they hit Torrey Krug, they hit Charlie McAvoy really hard. Really hard and really often. So they got to kind of keep that up if they want to have some success in Game 7. I'm excited about Game 7. Here's the big thing that might put the Bruins over the top in Game 7. And don't forget to hit the like button if you guys are watching on Facebook or YouTube right now. And hit that share button too. Spread the word for the Hockey Talk Show. Let all your friends know we're talking some good hockey over here at HockeyTalkShow.com and on all our social platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Matt writes in, long-term blueprints are going to be tough in the salary cap era unless you model your blueprint after the New England Patriots and not overpaying players long-term. Credit the New England Patriots. And it's interesting you bring this up, Matt. Credit the New England Patriots because Belichick does not overpay. It's very rare he actually makes a bad personnel decision. Gets good character guys 99% of the time. The occasional misstep for him. he's given some guys some second chances, and some of them have come back to bite him in the ass. But he, for the most part, makes good personnel decisions. And he does have that team first formula where he slots guys in, and this is what these guys make in these positions with what they contribute. And if you want a little bit more than that, well, good luck to you. Go on and go somewhere else, because this is how we do it. And he's let guys go, and he's paid the guys that he's needed to. And it doesn't hurt that he has Tom Brady in with him as well. All right. Dave, Chris, Deirdre, and Emily in the Facebook. Let's get to some of your questions, and then we're going to drop some news on you guys. Let me see here. You know what, Deirdre? I'm going to save your question. Even though you're rooting for Boston, last night was the least physical, says Emily. I agree. They got to get back to physicality. St. Louis, got to get back to it. It's the key. It's what's won them every single series. And Jordan Binnington. So the thing that scares me for game seven, if you're rooting for Boston, which I picked Boston, so I'm not really rooting for anybody, but I want to look smart, so I'm kind of rooting for them. Binnington, and we talked about this on a previous episode, Binnington has been killer. Killer. Well, he's been killer all year long, but he's been killer, especially killer, in games after he's lost a game. I forget what the stat was, but we had it. He had like less than two goals. He let less than two goals in games after a loss. So he is going to especially be sharp, I think. It's going to be tough for Boston. But here's some breaking news for you guys. It looks like for game seven, the Boston Bruins are going to have number 12 in the stands. It looks like Tom Brady is going to be waving the flag for the Boston Bruins in game seven. To me, this is huge news. This is the Boston Bruins pulling out as many stops as they possibly can, as they do whatever they can to win game seven in the Stanley Cup final. You may be thinking, and it doesn't matter. This is dumb. I hate Tom Brady because I'm not a Patriots fan, and we're all just born and bred to hate Tom Brady and the Patriots. Yes, true, all of that stuff. But just like how Chara came in to play and got that huge applause in Boston, that building, TD Garden, is going to explode when number 12 walks out and starts waving that Boston Bruins flag. Now, it's not a complete done deal, but from what I understand, it's almost there, and the Bruins are trying their hardest to make sure that happens. And it's a great move, because where else do you go? You already had Bobby Orr do it, right? You already had Bobby Orr do it. All the Boston Bruins greats are pretty much taken. How about the last guy to win a championship in your city? And everybody loves Tom Brady in Boston. Everybody. Everybody loves Tom Brady there. So this, to me, is a massive move, because it is all about emotion come game seven. And when he walks in, the place is going to be deafening. And can the St. Louis Blues withstand that? Can they withstand how juiced the Boston Bruins players are and how they're going to be? Because let me tell you something, the first 5 minutes of this game is going to be super important. Super important. Last time the Bruins were in a game seven, they won 4-0. It wasn't really all that close or impressive. And as we've been saying in this episode, the Bruins have been the more even-keeled team because they've been there before. This is the first time for St. Louis. So you may say, Ant, this is dumb. Tom Brady's not going to matter. To me, Tom Brady matters. Emily says he's the MVP for Boston. Emily, he's the MVP for sports, period. Name an athlete in the four major sports that's been more dominant, is more popular, has a bigger brand than Tom Brady. You can't do it. You cannot do it. There's not one that exists. He's head and shoulder pads above the rest. Maybe Steph Curry and the Golden State teams are kind of close. LeBron obviously is a massive brand, but he hasn't won the way Tom Brady's won. He hasn't been as dominant as Tom Brady has. You know, years ago we had Michael Jordan. He would stop everything. There was nobody bigger than Michael Jordan. Right now, there is Nobody bigger. Nobody bigger than Tom Brady. It's not even close. There's not an NASCAR, forget it. Soccer, forget it. I don't care. But it's really popular in the rest. I don't care. You flash this guy's face anywhere in the world, anywhere in the farthest reaches of Australia, in the middle of China, in the non-English speaking parts of Russia, in the jungles, in the deserts of Africa, you show somebody this guy's picture and they're going to go, oh, Tom Brady. He's the biggest. The man had a candy bar for the love of Pete. Thanks, Matt. Good line. That crowd's going to be crazy. So there's a little something for everybody. Go on and tell your friends you heard it. You can pretty much, well, you can take it to the bank that they're trying to get him there. I think he'll show. I think he'll be the flag bearer. And if it's not him, it'll be somebody from the Patriots organization. If they got Belichick to come and Brady, that would be just gigantic. That would be gigantic. It would be huge. And that city will be electric. You'd probably be able to hear people yelling and screaming from outside the arena. You know what I mean? It'll be nuts. It'll be absolutely nuts. And I can't wait for it. Game 7, first 5 minutes are going to be super important. Super, super important. Because the pressure is on St. Louis, if you ask me. Because I think Boston's going to come out and they're going to know what to do. And St. Louis has to have a good road period. Now, like I said, the two things that St. Louis has going for them in this series, bounce back games for Binnington have been stellar, and they are actually better on the road than they are at home. Way better on the road than they are at home. That's what Pamela Beasley was saying in her mid-game interview over on NBC when she said, look, it's my turn, to John Krasinski. And here's our little office Stanley Cup Finals update for you. So Jenna Fischer was saying how the last time, well, when they were shooting The Office, it was St. Louis and the Red Sox in the World Series. And St. Louis got swept. And she said how half the show would be in her trailer rooting for St. Louis and half the show would be in John's trailer rooting for Boston. And Boston won and she had to withstand that. So Jenna says, it is my turn. And John's response was, should I invite someone else to Game 7? I also think it would be damn spectacular if John Krasinski and Jenna Fischer were sitting next to each other for this game. I think that would be stellar. I think NBC is going to try and pull that together because this is bringing in all sorts of new hockey fans into the mix. Anthony brings up a good point on YouTube. David Ortiz would be cool, but don't think he will be healed up enough. That's true. For those of you unaware, David Ortiz was shot early this morning in the Dominican Republic, shot in the back. And from what we understand by all the reports, he is in stable condition and doing well and going to make a full recovery. So that's good. We hope he does. But David Ortiz would be huge. David Ortiz would be big, but not as big as Tom Brady. Tom Brady still would be amazing. Absolutely amazing. All right, let's talk. Let's see. Do I have anything else here on the Stanley Cup Finals? No, we're good. That's everything. Oh, no, there is one more thing. I apologize. There is one more thing. The stupid St. Louis people, not that everybody in St. Louis is stupid, but some of the people are. Supposedly, for the St. Louis Dispatch, they embarrassingly published a letter from Tom Stillman, who is the St. Louis Blues team owner, on Sunday that was celebrating the championship that the team did not win. So I guess in preparation of a win, Tom wrote this letter that was kind of like an ad. And in the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, stupid St. Louis Post-Dispatch actually published the letter before they won the championship. God. Stillman wrote, quote, winning the Stanley Cup was a dream come true for so many of you. All of us will remember where we were, what we did, and how we felt when the Blues brought the cup home. Eek. Man. That obviously did not happen. This looks really bad. And I don't know what the St. Louis Blues dispatch is, but I am going to go ahead and buy tomorrow's paper to see if they claim that the St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series. That's what I'm going to do. whatever it is, this actual move kind of made out, because I'm going to go ahead and plunk down a buck and see if I can get a paper tomorrow. Blues need a big game out of Tarasenko. Dude, they need a big game out of Tarasenko, out of Ryan O'Reilly, out of Jordan Binnington, out of Alex Pietrangelo. They need a big game out of everybody. The weird thing is, ironically, like in game seven, you kind of just throw the playbook out a little bit. I mean, you got to look, like I said, St. Louis has to hit. Boston has to just put pucks on net, on a lot of them. But for the most part, game seven, it's just going to come down to who wants it more and who's going to play harder. You know, you're still going to have your strategies and everything else. And yeah, you need your big games out of your big guys, but it really, game sevens are coin tosses. You know, they really are. As a final prediction, Boston will win this game at home. I believe they'll win a Stanley Cup here. Sorry, St. Louis Blues fans, but that's just, as an educated hockey person looking at this, I have to pick Boston. They seem like a better team. But I will say this. Don't be surprised if this game goes into overtime, and don't be surprised if this is a 2-1 scored game. I don't in any way, shape, or form see this thing go. Like, I mean, unless it's 5-0 in the first period, this thing to me is going to be super tight and super close. Nobody's going to want to give up a goal here. Yeah, they're going to want to score, but they don't want to get scored on. I think we're going to see that type of game in game seven, and I think we're going to see a 2-1 win out of the Boston Bruins, and don't be surprised if it's in overtime. And what the crazy thing is if you can get a game to overtime, it's even more of a coin toss. I mean, it's even more of a coin toss. Game seven, winner take all, by the way, Wednesday night, 8 o'clock on NBC here in the States. All right, let's talk some trade rumors. We're going to wrap up the show in the next 5 minutes. So if you have a question on what you've been hearing and how legitimate I think it is, or what I've been hearing, throw it in the comments right now, and I will get to as many as I possibly can. Deirdre, I will get to your question about Mitch Marner, because I think the major... it's really close for me between Winnipeg and Toronto as the teams to watch as having the biggest dominoes, because I think those pieces in Line A and Marner gotta kind of figure themselves out, you know? And I think that we're going to see a lot of things sort of wait around what Winnipeg and the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to do as far as free agency goes, especially as far as the RFA situations go. That, to me, those are the big puzzle pieces to me. Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, because they've got three, right? And Trouba, Connor, and Laine, and then the Marner situation. I think Marner is the biggest domino to look out for. But you know, Winnipeg is equally as interesting because they have three. And, speaking of, Winnipeg, they went off and, traded this gentleman right here, which is rare that you get a trade during a Stanley Cup final, but we got one when, Winnipeg sent Kevin Hayes to the Flyers for a fifth round pick. This is a rights deal. And we heard from Chuck Fletcher today saying that they have had some dialogue this week. It has continued this week. They had some previous dialogue. And Chuck Fletcher said in a statement today, quote, "Next week is the week of the draft. This week will be an important week. I will certainly have more time to meet with Kevin Hayes face to face. Had some good preliminary conversations with Kevin and his representation. I expect to follow up with Kevin and his camp this week, and we will see how it goes. I don't know how to characterize it other than we've had good conversation and we are hopeful that we can make something work. I don't have a vibe other than he's certainly open-minded. You have to remember he's 2 weeks away from getting to July 1, so that's a nice status to obtain in this league. Certainly he's earned that right, and we are respectful of that. I think we have a lot to offer in Philly, so we will continue to speak to him, and I think he's open-minded to conversations. At least that is what his camp has said to us. And obviously, we have strong interest in him." So the Flyers continue to talk to Kevin Hayes, who they now own the rights to. But as I've said on this show before, again, why would you sign a contract in June? Not a lot of players will do that unless we get a scenario like we saw with Jeff Skinner, where you look at the deal you have in front of you and you go, "I'm not going to do better than this. not going to do better than this. If you could determine that the deal you have in front of you in June is the best deal that you're going to have in July, then go ahead and sign it. And by the way, I love this move from the Philadelphia Flyers. Even if they don't wind up getting Kevin Hayes signed, I still like the move. To me, gestures matter. Hashtag gestures matter. When you tell a player, I'm willing to completely lose a draft pick over you just to get a chance to talk to you first, that means something to a player. That really does. Especially hockey players who are really good people, loyal people. That means something to them. So I like this move. And if you have the extra picks to do it, do it. It doesn't always work out. Again, if I'm on the player side, I'm going, don't sign this. We'll go to July 1st. We'll get the big ticket item. If I'm on the team side and Chuck Fletcher comes to me and goes, Ant, what do you think? Should we give a fifth up to talk to Kevin Hayes early? Yep. Absolutely. That's exactly what you want to do. Get in his ear first. Tell him what you got here. Tell him about Hart. Tell him that Giroux still got his game going. Tell him that him on that second line for the Philadelphia Flyers would be amazing. Tell him that he plays Flyers hockey already. Big body, good speed, likes to hit, scoring ability, everything else. I really like Kevin Hayes. I thought it was a solid pickup by the Winnipeg Jets. And I think he's a great player. And I think it's a good pickup by the Philadelphia Flyers to give this the good old college try. I really, really do. I really do. Anthony's got a great question that I have a great answer to. I'm going to get to that in a second, but I've been promising Deirdre, so I want to make sure I get to hers. Deirdre writes, my friend thinks the Leafs will sign Marner. I told him I highly doubt it. They would have to give up. Oh, wait. Was it? Who's going to sign Marner? The Islanders? My friend thinks the Islanders will sign Marner. I told him I highly doubt it. They would have to give up a lot and any kind of movement on Lee or Leonard. I'm nervous on that one. Love your show. Thank you, Deirdre. Love your comment. Love the amount of Islander fans that we have following the Hockey Talk Show. I really do appreciate that. I think that Lee's gone. I don't know if he'll re-sign. I think the odds are on the favor that he will go and go to free agency and go to the Minnesota Wild. I think you have the hometown scenario there with Anders Lee. I think you have a general manager in Minnesota who's desperate to put his stamp on this team as early as he possibly can. He obviously wants to move Zucker out, so he's trying to free up as much space as he can. He's going to have to live with the contract for Suter and Parisi for the next 14,000 years. I think that Anders Lee is one of the best young and underrated players. I mean, this guy's been a 30 goal scorer, really, for the last few years. He proved in this past year that he's a great leader and he doesn't need a superstar on his line to put up big numbers, that he is a star in his own right. And, you know, kind of what Kevin Hayes is going to be thinking, what all these guys are going to be thinking is, I don't get a lot of chance. I don't get a lot of control in my life, in my career. You know, when you're a player, when you're a hockey player, you get drafted. You have 3 years that you belong to a franchise, and they'll stretch that out too. Because if you don't make the team right away and they don't burn a year of your contract, you belong to them for 3 years without them having even to sign you. So you could belong to a team for 6 years, right? Right off the bat. And then your first chance at free agency is restricted. So, you know, the amount of players that leave via RFA is super rare. And the only reason why we keep talking about that now is because the amount of RFAs we have and the amount of really good RFAs. Like, you have to be at Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Mitch Marner level to be able to go out and control your own terms when it comes to RFAs. Because most of the time, it's not worth it to go and sign the offer sheet when the team could match. All the power in the RFA situation is usually up to a team. That's why this year is so super rare. So you don't really get a lot of chance to control your destiny. You know, I liken it to kids who grow up in a family business. Most of the time they have to take over their family business. They don't get to say, oh, I want to be a lawyer or I want to be a doctor or anything like that. You know, they're in the family business. That's it. So it's kind of the same thing. You never really get to have your own terms. Imagine if you went to college and somebody just told you, you're going to work here. And then after 6 years, they're like, here's your raise to stay. You can't go anywhere else. And then after another year or 2 years, depending on what your deal was, finally you can go out and do whatever you want. You're going to go out and you're going to listen. You're going to want to maybe go play at home. That's why I never faulted John Tavares for what he did. I know it hurt a lot of Islander fans. I know it hurt the franchise. Never faulted him. Not once. Well, he could have told everybody earlier and he couldn't have... Poppycock. You put yourself in John Tavares' situation where you've never really had a choice. Well, he had. And he chose to stay for a majority of that time. You can't blame a person for wanting to go where he wants to go. You just can't do it. So I think Anders Lee is pretty much on his way out. I don't really see much, you know, keeping him here other than the fact of he likes the team and he likes the area. And that's all great reasons, but it's not home. It's just not. And home's a big deal. John Tavares never lied to the fan base. Real Real's comment. John Tavares lied to the fan base. That is 1,000% completely false. The truth of the matter is, and Islander fans will never admit this, but I know this to be true. They had a chance to keep him here. It was a last-minute decision. And it's nobody's fault but that Islanders organization. And that's the truth. John Tavares never lied to anybody. Because he is the type of person that if he was going to say, look, I really think there's a good chance I might go to Toronto next year, he would have went to management, he would have told them, and they would have traded him. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. John Tavares, was it in his mind that he could go back to Toronto? Of course it was. It was possible. But he could have went to San Jose. He could have stayed. He could have done a lot of things. He never lied to anybody. His desire to play in New York was legitimate. It was genuine. But what won out in the end was it was his hometown. It was his favorite team growing up. That's not his fault. He never lied. Never, ever, not once. He was as honest as he could be. He said, I'd like to stay. We're going to talk. The Islanders screwed that up. Charles Wong, rest in peace, didn't handle it well. Garth Snow didn't handle it well. And when the new owners came in, and God bless those guys, Scott Malkin and John Ledecky, they did great. But they made big mistakes, too. They left too much up to John. They put too much on his shoulders. John Tavares was making major decisions for that franchise. And that was a mistake that should have never been done. And to me, that was the final nail in that coffin. So you can't sit here and tell me John Tavares lied to the fans. He didn't. The Islanders screwed it up. And I like Real Real a lot. You must also believe in unicorns and the tooth fairy. No, I believe in the truth. And I know what happens. And I talk to people and I read situations and scenarios. And that's the absolute truth. You can't let your superstar decide when the team practices and when they don't. You can't let him make the decisions that general managers and head coaches should be making. That's far too much responsibility for a player to handle. The Islanders screwed that up. He didn't. And he never lied. He never lied. He told you he was going to consider his options all along. He never lied to you. Never, ever, not once. The Islanders screwed that up. You could be mad that of the decision that he made, you could not agree with it, not like it. That is totally acceptable. But he never lied. Everybody knew he was a free agent. There was no lying. And the fact that he went to the night before he announced his decision to make a decision proves that I'm right. Because if he was going to Toronto, he would have just went. That decision wouldn't have waited till the last second. Emily Ann, our ownership was definitely trash. I still don't like JT, but you're right. He had them by the balls. Look, and again, Scott Malkin and John Ledecky are as good of owners as you can possibly get. They're not bad people. They're awesome people. They're great owners. They made a rookie mistake. They thought they were doing something good by letting John decide all these things. They thought that they were giving him the opportunity. They weren't. They were screwing it up. They were putting too much on his shoulders. Because what happens when you're the guy who decides when there's practice? This guy comes over and goes, oh man, but John, let's kill practice tomorrow. I'm tired. I'm hurting. I got to go do this. Let's not do practice. And that's not a position any player should be put in. That's why you have head coaches. They're the bad guy. You see any big trades, deals going down? Yes. Yes, I do. In fact, look out for Thursday and look out for Friday. I could see a flurry of activity as soon as that Stanley Cup is done. I see a flurry of activity happening over the course of the weekend as we get set to head into the draft. There is going to be a lot of stuff going on for sure. For sure. All right, Anthony had a good question here. Do I think the Buffalo Sabres overpaid for Skinner? Here's my answer to this. And this is an answer that I got during my time working in the National Hockey League. Yes, I do. But I have yet to seen a player sign with a team who is a big ticket free agent not be overpaid. Because the truth of the matter is, and maybe this changed slightly and it's not 100% of the case, but when I worked for the National Hockey League, I was so curious to see what it was like on free agency day. And so my first year that I interned, I wasn't scheduled to be there, but I went in anyway because I just wanted to be in the room. I just wanted to see what the office was like when they were making those deals done. And through conversations and things like this and that and all that stuff, the truth of the matter is, when you want somebody and you're fighting against other teams, you essentially most of the time call up the agent and you go, what's your guy want? And when they tell you a number, you go, okay. And that's essentially it. The players dictate everything. Managing the cap, figuring out if you have this, all that kind of stuff. But it's not like Jeff Skinner rolls in there and goes, I'd like $9 million a year for 8 years. And Buffalo turns around and goes, well, let me tell you all the great things about playing in Buffalo. And would you take seven over 7 years? Would you take eight over 8 years? Would you take seven over 8 years? That doesn't really happen. It really doesn't. You ask the player what they want, and then you go back in and you figure out if you can pay for it. That's essentially it. And like I said, in this scenario, to get somebody to sign a contract in June, you have to overpay. You have to give him a deal he's not going to get anywhere else, or else he's not going to sign. Why do that? Again, put yourself in this scenario. You're 10 days away from being able to go to every company in the field that you work in and go, who wants my services? I don't know if you noticed, but I had a great year last year. It doesn't matter what you are, a lawyer, an accountant. I audited the crap out of them books. I had a banner year. Who wants to pay for my services? I'm the best accountant in the game. You're going to get a lot of good offers. And you're going to figure out what's the best one for you. So if your firm wants to keep you, they better pay. So do I think they overpaid for Skinner? Yeah, I do. Did they have a choice? Nope. No, they didn't. Not in the least. Let's see here. To say that JD didn't lie is not... Look, man, I don't know what to tell you. The guy didn't lie. This is absurd. If you can't accept this, I mean, I don't even know what to say to you. The guy was going to free agency. He said he was going to consider his options. Where's the lie? He was secretly always going to Toronto, right? That's what he was doing. Yeah, John Tavares was secretly always going to Toronto. That's why he didn't tell anybody. That's why he didn't ask for a trade. That's why he waited till the last possible second. That's why he met with the San Jose Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights and all these other teams. That's why he did all that, because all along, don't tell anybody, but I'm going to sign with Toronto. I mean, it's just crazy. I'm not criticizing you guys in the chat. It's an immature way to go about it. You're just mad because he left. He never lied to anybody. He did put Toronto in a little bit of a precarious situation, though. That's pretty damn sure. And John, let me follow up on your comment. Lee, I think will go. It hasn't been decided yet. He might stay. Adam, billionaire and businessman Alex Marullo to buy the Coyotes. That's what I think they are going after Matt Duchene. So if it's true that they will have money to spend, do they still try and get Patrick Marleau and another asset? I think if you're the Coyotes, you can go for Patrick Marleau. There's room on your roster for Patrick Marleau. But I think the key for the Coyotes is, dear Toronto and Kyle Dubas, boy, you are in a precarious situation. How high of a draft pick do you want to give me to take Matt Duchene off your hands? Because that's the move, right? You can get, it'd be nice to have Patrick Marleau in your lineup for a year, but really the asset that you can get to go along with Patrick Marleau is the move. I love your passion, John, but I'm just not wrong about John Tavares. It's the absolute truth. I mean, this has been written about. You can go and read it. It's not on the weird blogs, but you can go out and read about this. Like, John Tavares, he was this close to staying. I mean, he was. He just was. If the, you know, there's a million things to fall into place there that it could have happened a little bit better, none of which Lou Lamoriello was able to save in the last couple of days. But I can't go on about this. The guy never lied. If he was never going to Toronto from the beginning of the season, it was always a possibility. It was always there. The guy was going for free agency and he wasn't signed. It was always a possibility. He said he was going to look at his options, but that he wanted to return to New York. Where's the lie? There's no lie. There is no lie. Get over it. There's no lie. He never lied. Not once. He never lied. This was always a possibility. And Islander ownership knew it. And if Scott Malkin and Jonathan Ledecky would have taken over a year earlier and been able to avoid the rookie mistakes that they made, I think he might have stayed. The Dugway, John makes a good point. Dugway getting fired, Snowford getting fired, Snow hanging around for too long, their inability to build around him. A lot of things went into this, but I really think it was the fact that he had rookie owners and they made some bad moves. They left too many decisions up to him in the first place. Listen, go research it. Go look it up. You can read the articles on this. This is very well known on the inside of hockey fans. It doesn't get talked about. There's not a lot of light shed on it because people want to yell and scream about how unfortunate it was for the Islanders. I don't want to spend too much time on John Tavares. That was last year's news. Let's talk about quickly here Toronto, and then we got to wrap things up. Toronto's in a lot of trouble. Marleau, thank you for the comment, Adam. Marleau to the Coyotes makes sense. As we've talked about, Marleau is out of Toronto. He's put his house up for sale. That's been confirmed. He's going to go back to the West Coast. It's just what deals can be worked out. The other thing that I feel like people aren't talking about a lot of is Toronto is almost ripe for the pickings here, because not only do you have Marleau leaving, and obviously Mitch Marner is the big golden goose here, but you know, if you're going to sign him to a contract offer sheet, you're going to have to give up 4 first-round picks. That's a big, hefty price. I think what a lot of general managers are doing, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of talk around Marner and an offer sheet, just to kind of shake that tree loose. Because if you look at what else they have here, Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen, Connor Brown, like, you got a lot of other good players that are now exposed to being traded or leave because of the precarious situation John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs have put themselves in. And I'm really interested because I really like Kasperi Kapanen's game. I think he's going to be a really good player somewhere else. And Andreas Johnson, Andreas Janssen and all these other guys, even William Nylander, who we all know is easily out of their core for the one to go. You know, that could boil up to, look, if Kyle Dubas has to make a move on Nylander this year, I don't think he would, but if he has to, he can justify it with Nylander's bad season. I'm not saying he's going to, but if he winds up in a situation where he's in trouble and nobody will take anything but William Nylander and he's got to make that move, he can justify it with the bad season that he had. for sure. So the Toronto Maple Leafs, again, like I said, continue to be an interesting watch. Marlowe's going to be gone. What do you do with Kapanen? What do you do with Janssen? What do you do with Connor Brown? And now we know that Zaitsev wants to trade out of there. You got a lot of turnover. And we know Jake Gardner is leaving. So this is going to be a really, really different Toronto Maple Leaf team come next season. Something to watch for sure. Artemi Panarin, to me, it's the Rangers. But I think that Florida has a possibility with both Bobrovsky and him going down to Florida. That's what I keep hearing, by the way. I know he's got the model slash actress girlfriend slash wife. I don't know. I don't even remember what the situation is, and wants to be in a big city. Miami works just as good. You know, I don't know if the Rangers thing is a done deal, but it works just as good. For sure. And I also, a lot of people are talking about Vancouver. There's a lot of talk about Vancouver, and we'll save this for the next show. But Vancouver and Jim Benning, I mean, it seems like they are ripe for a big move. Doesn't it feel like a little bit of a earthquakey trembling thing, you know? Feels like Vancouver's about to do something pretty drastic in this offseason, and I don't know what it is. I don't even know if they know for sure what it is, but I think they know. I think they know it's going to be huge. I mean, they're looking at $30 million in cap space. You know, they got Brock Besser in place. They've got what's his name? Their goaltending. Markstrom and Thatcher, maybe Thatcher I can get a little excited about. But they have Brock Besser in place. They got Bo Horvat in place. Brandon Sutter's done fairly well there. Okay, they obviously want to move Louis Erickson, and they'll probably wind up moving him for another bad contract. I think we'll see a lot of bad contract swaps in the offseason too. But I don't know. Feels like they're poised to do something pretty big here. I mean, really big. Anthony's got a great comment. We'll wrap on this. I can't believe Vancouver was considering Lucic after the 2011 Cup Finals. He is from there, though. That's an interesting one to me, Lucic for Erickson. That's really interesting. And Louis Erickson has a history with Dave Tippett. So that makes a lot of sense there from that standpoint. Oh, that was the other thing I want to mention on Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes and, Alain Vigneault worked together in New York. So that, you know, it makes sense. Coaching relationships with players makes sense. Totally. So we'll see there. But yeah, Lucic for Erickson. It's like you're just swapping bad contracts. But at that point, you might as well. Change of scenery is not a bad play if you're a general manager. Just sitting there with some bad contracts. All right. Great conversation. Very, very lively. I love the talk. John Tavares never lied to us, though. It's the same way that Mitch Marner never lied, and everybody's going to be like, what a liar, you know, when he goes and signs somewhere else. Who are the Islanders drafting at 23? Do you hear the Islanders are in love with any of the draftees? We will address the draft coming up. Too much to label there. The draft looks super interesting, though. We did drop that little nugget on you that the Rangers signed Kaapo Kapanen's. That guy's like really good friend. So obviously that's going to happen. And Jack Hughes and the Devils, and we know that. But it kind of seems like this draft really breaks around 4, 5, and 6 and kind of gets crazy. So I think we're going to see a lot of fireworks. There's a lot of uncertainty in this year's draft, and that's exciting for a fan. That's really, really exciting for a fan. Wednesday Stanley Cup Final. Excited about that. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Look for a lot of fireworks. I think we'll start to see some player movement. We're going to start to see some things. We still won't have a head coach for the Anaheim Ducks, but we're going to see some player movement and some signings and some offer sheets for sure. Great talking with you guys. Excellent comments on YouTube and Facebook. Don't forget, if you watch the show live, go and click that play button over on the podcast page. Get us a little revenue going there. You could even go back and click on some old episodes. You could keep the volume down for all I care. We just need those play clicks on the podcast to help us put a little money in the old coffers here and spread the word. on your Twitter, on your Facebook, in your beer league, at your workplace. If there's a hockey fan, send them to the Hockey Talk Show. Make sure that they're subscribing on YouTube. Make sure they're following us on Facebook. And make sure they're subscribed over on the podcast. Thanks, guys. Have a great night. Looking forward to Game 7 here. Blues and Bruins. Give me the Bruins winning 2-1.